Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In this segment, we will be talking with Mr. Ajit Sanjeti, the co-founder and CEO at a leading cybersecurity firm known as Preempt Security. They're based in San Francisco, California. Ajit, thanks for your time, and let's go ahead and get started.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Our pleasure. We looked up your bio, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Could you please elaborate more on the highlights of your career?
Sure. Yeah, I got into cybersecurity in 2000. It was around the end of the dot-com boom. I joined a company called OneSecure, which now has led to many, many entrepreneurs that came out of it. But OneSecure was trying to build a managed security services at a time when startups were going out of business. So we were asked, I was doing product management, running product management there. We were asked by the board to come up with a new business model that would work, that customers would trust. And we went off, we researched it in 4 weeks as much as we could. We decided to go down the path of building the first inline intrusion prevention system. We had intrusion detection systems until then. We commercialized the first internal intrusion prevention system, which ultimately led to this whole category of unified threat management appliances. You know, you think about Palo Alto Networks, he was also the founder of OneSecure, Fortinet, and all Barracuda Networks, all of the security companies that came out building unified appliances. Some of the key technologies were built around intrusion prevention. So I was there. We launched the product. 9/11 happened. We got acquired by a company called NetScreen. I ran a couple of product lines there. We got acquired by Juniper Networks, and I left Juniper and started another company called Mu Dynamics. And Mu Dynamics was building security testing tools that primarily sold to manufacturers like Cisco and Juniper and the rest of them, but also to intelligence agencies and service providers. And after we started that company in 2005, we successfully exited that in 2012. It sold to a company called Spirent. And then I took some time off. And after that, it's Preempt. It's been my third foray into security, looking at it from different aspects. Every time, we ended up building a new market.
Okay. Now, obviously, this is a company that you helped create. Is this like your own company, or do you have other partners involved, other co-founders?
Yeah, I'm not the kind of person who can start a company by myself. I have
right.
a really, really strong technological founder named Roman Blachman. Roman Blachman came out of the Israeli intelligence services, Unit 8200, and he's based out of Israel, and I'm here in San Francisco. So the two of us, we set about looking at the security market. Even in 2014 when we started, we looked around. There were so many security startups, but we noticed some macro trends that were emerging that led us to believe that the kind of solution that Preempt was going to offer would matter, you know, at this time. And that's what led to the creation of Preempt. It was a risk to work with someone who's, you know, 10,000 miles away. But I have to tell you, that has not been our challenge. We've actually had a great team based out of San Francisco, based out of Israel, and people around the country, now people around the world. So Preempt has a lot of backing from a lot of very strong people, and Roman is definitely one of the key members of that team.
That sounds awesome. Now, how long has Preempt been in business?
Yeah, so officially we launched in 2014. We formed the company in 2014. We got, towards the end of the year, we knew what we were doing, the concepts that we wanted to build, and at the end of the year, we raised a small seed round, but coding with a small core group of a team started on January 1st, 2015, and we've been in business, you know, since 14. We started writing code in 15, launched product towards the end of 2016. So, yeah, it's been great. We've come, the products evolved, the company's evolved, it's grown not just in terms of how the product is being perceived, but it's also grown in how much confidence customers have doing and deploying it in ways that will really help them solve some key security challenges. So I hope that answers
your
question.
You mentioned Israel. Go ahead. Preempt have a presence in other countries as well, like in Asia, the Pacific Rim, or Middle East?
Sometimes when you've done multiple startups, you learn some lessons, and they're hard lessons to learn. One of the things I learned from my last experience with New Dynamics is you have to be careful about expanding worldwide too quickly, because you're trying to learn from your customers as quickly as you can. So this time we were very deliberate. We started out, the team in Israel, but we focused on customers in the United States and Canada. That was really all where we focused, even though we were seeing customers, prospects calling us from different parts of the world. But then about last year, we started getting customers in Europe, primarily in the UK, even without having a presence there. And we actually closed those customers. And at the end of last year, and we're just going to announce it, we actually now have teams in Western Europe. Then that's really where we're starting to see our next phase of growth. So nothing in Asia or in Australia at this point. So it's primarily North America and now Western Europe.
Awesome. That sounds great. Now, who is your typical customer base like? Is it the small to medium-sized businesses, the mom-and-pop shops, or the Fortune 500, or perhaps a combination of all of them?
I would say, if you think about it, it's usually companies with a reasonable number of employees. Typically, they have to be over 1,000 employees, because what we're trying to do is to help them understand what's happening across all their employee base. What's happening, and usually you need a certain set of number of employees to be able to do that. So generally what we find is our customers have thousands of employees and higher into the hundreds of thousands. We have quite a few customers that are under 1,000, but those tend to be more in the financial vertical, because they really care about security. They could be asset management firms, they could be hedge funds, but typically we see that they are medium to large enterprises, Fortune 500. But when it comes to the verticals itself, it's pretty broad, because the way we're trying to solve the problem is not tied to an industry or some kind of regulation. Though, like you expect, when it's a new technology, the customers have been in financials, healthcare, retail, law firms. We've even seen some industrial firms as our customers. So it's been very broad, but as you would expect, finance, healthcare, retail, legal, they've been driving our initial success.
Okay. Now, it looks like you have products that are called the Preempt Platform and the Preempt Inspector. And then when I look at your website, it seems like they cut across a lot of different IT areas, like prudential compromise, privileged access, Active Directory, insider threats, zero trust, continuously adaptive security. Can you explain more about your product line and how they actually cut across these different cybersecurity realms?
Yeah, so to do that, let me try to explain kind of what problem we were trying to solve. And that will give you an indication of how we solve these different problems. But first, what I do want to say is Preempt Inspector is something that we offer for free. We just want to give it out in the world. There are things that are very valuable that we think enterprises can use. It's available for download. You use it, you do what you want with it. You'll be surprised the things enterprises find with it. We've done a few research reports with it that, around password quality, password strength, around whether you have stealthy administrators on your network that you are not tracking. They have privileges that you should probably be aware of. And that's Preempt Inspector. It's a great tool. People should use it. It does not require anything other than just being able to download and run it on your network with an account. Now, when Preempt itself, as we started as a company, and Roman and I were thinking about what is it that enterprises are trying to solve, as you heard, and you hear often, in fact, even the CEO of Cisco mentioned in Davos this week, identity has become the new perimeter, meaning we've gone away from saying what is the inside of the enterprise network, what is the outside of the enterprise network, because, we're moving to the cloud. Some enterprise applications are on-prem, some enterprise applications on the cloud. Our employees are very mobile. They're coming in from home. They're inside the enterprise. They're using their own devices. They're using corporate devices. So in that kind of an environment, this old traditional notion of what is outside and what is inside, what is secure, what needs to be secure, what doesn't need to be secure, has gone away. So the new perimeter is identity, which is why you're seeing this big growth in identity companies, and companies and enterprises have so many identity-related projects, identity and access management, IAM, as you hear. But what we said was, okay, identity was considered to be an IT function for access. But if you think of it in the context of security, then there's a lot of gaps. Because if you're just looking for access, then you have Active Directory, you have identity, as a single sign-on solutions on the one side. If you're looking at it from a security standpoint, the only solutions you see today are more like the perimeter-based network solutions that most enterprises have, which have two modes. Allow or deny. They have no granular way of challenging you, verifying you, and confirming that you are who you say you are, doing what you think you should be doing. And then on the third, part of a triangle, it's the solutions that tell you, let's take all the logs and we'll do analytics, big data. We're going to do this. We're going to do that with your data. Let's bring in 150 data sources, and then we're going to do user analytics, behavioral analytics, all that kind of stuff. Behavioral analytics is noisy. It's not actionable. The course blocking, allow or deny, great. But if you have one false positive, someone's going to have to remove it, especially if the CEO is not allowed to access what they want to access. And just identity and access, the authentication systems that you have are pretty static. So what we said was, okay, I know this is a long-winded answer, I apologize. What we said was, what if you can take identity, which is static, combine it with behavior, access behavior, that is who you are, what are you doing, where are you accessing, are you coming from outside, are you coming from the inside, are you using the system that you've always used, are you accessing an application you always do. So your identity tells you, okay, are you a privileged user, are you a regular employee, are you a contractor? Your behavior says what you're doing, what is normal for people like you, what is normal for organizations like yourself. And the third is risk. And risk is, are you using a managed device that the company gave you? Are you coming from a spammy IP? Are you suddenly showing up from Lithuania? Are you accessing a sensitive application that you shouldn't, that you have never accessed before? If you put identity, behavior, and risk on one side, now you can start to provide some really key intelligence. Now, it's not unique to us. Different companies do it. We believe we do it nicely. But on the other side, if you can tie that to responses. So, for example, and make the responses a grayscale. Anything from allow on the one end, deny on the other, but there's other kinds of responses like multi-factor authentication, like re-authenticate, reset password, SMS, text. You have all these rich responses, and you tie them together with a very flexible policy. So you tie the identity behavior risk on the one side, the responses on the other, with a rich policy engine in between that says, yes, you're a privileged user and you access a new application, we're going to force you to do a multi-factor authentication on the fly. Because if you successfully authenticate, we maintain security, we allow you to do your job. And the third, the thing that we vendors always forget to mention, is you don't need to have an analyst chase another false alarm. That's one example. Another example would be if you have a service account that is very predictable in what it does, it suddenly starts to do interactive logins. What if you can figure out whether that's allowed, deny it, have someone else authorize it? Now suddenly you're starting to tie all this activity on your network with a set of responses that are automated, that allow you to maintain security, that allow you to respond, and also allow people to do their jobs. That had not been tried. And that's why we said you have to tie detection and response with this policy-based engine, and that's really what led to the Preempt platform. Now, if you take that approach, you can start to address things like credential compromise. Somebody's compromised, credentials have been compromised, they showed up on a new endpoint. Well, let's challenge them. Somebody's privileged, doing something unusual. Let's make sure they are who they say are. Block others, block it. Most solutions focus on, hackers try to get to Active Directory because that's where all the privileges are defined and things are done. Let's see how we can protect that. So if you think about it, right, we were able to take these concepts. They hadn't been tried before because nobody wants to stop people from getting access to what they want to do. And if we could do it in a very graduated way, we have a solution. So I'm going to stop now, but that was the genesis of how we thought about the problem. It took a long time to convince people to put us on the network the way we wanted them to. But we did it, and here we are.
Well, Mike, My hat's off to you, and that sounds like a huge accomplishment, so congratulations on that. Now, can you tell us a little bit more about the technical architecture that you use? I'm assuming this is all cloud-based, right?
Not necessarily. So think of it as a two-tier architecture, and it's a central management. Now, the central management can be on the customer's enterprise network. It can be in their private cloud. So it can be on the cloud. We're not a true SaaS solution. I want to be very clear about that. But you can put it in your own Azure AWS instance. And we have on the enterprise perimeter, on the domain controllers itself, you can have an agent or you can have a proxy in front of the domain controllers. Different enterprises have different rules about whether they'll put an agent on the domain controller, Active Directory domain controller. Some will not do that, so they can have a proxy that sits in front. But we can also be active or passive because sometimes people say, well, I'm going to walk before I run. And the old idea, intrusion detection to intrusion prevention analogies hold. So you can put it in active mode or passive mode. And so what happens is you drop these agents on domain controllers. You have a central management for one place to, and the central management can be in the cloud. If your domain controller is in the cloud, great. We can take it to the cloud. But we can also bring in other data sources. You have things like single sign-on, Okta and Ping. We can collect that data. People are coming in through the VPN gateways. We can collect that data. So now we give this holistic view of what your users are doing, what your service accounts are doing, what your devices are doing in one panel across any kind of system that they've accessed and authenticated from. And so think of it as a two-tier architecture, but it's all software, virtual appliance for the central management, on-prem, in the cloud, and agents wherever required. So that's the technical architecture. Makes it super easy for people to deploy and get started very quickly.
So it sounds like you've taken ease of use in a very strong consideration for your customers. It sounds excellent. Now, can you describe in a little bit more detail the pre-end platform applications? I know what you described a little bit more, but is there a little bit more detail you'd like to offer into it?
Yeah. So, you know, I always think, always wonder how we as vendors go wrong. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest things is we think that if we give you something, you'll absorb everything we offer you in day one. And it's extremely difficult because there's processes, there's things you need to do. And so the digesting process is very, very incremental. We have 100 different capabilities. You're probably going to start with 5 or 6, and then you're going to add more and more as you go. So we want to think of it as a customer journey. And the platform applications are somewhat structured in that customer journey. So typically what an enterprise would do is drop our central management and very quickly start to get the insights, who my privileged users are, my regular users are, who's been stale, who's got weak passwords, who's been doing things that are risky. You start to give that kind of insights. Then the second part of that is dropping the agents on the domain controllers and starting to build the API connections to single sign-on to the VPN gate. Now when you do that, you can start to detect things because now you're getting traffic in addition to logs and other metadata. Now you can start to figure out, okay, I see some lateral movement. That's a 20-year-old problem, past the hash. I start to see privilege escalation. I start to see authentications happening that I've never seen before. And so now you get to the second phase where it's the analytics and the detection, really understanding the rich security challenges that people face on the inside of the enterprise network. The third is the enforcement. You start to get more aggressive. You say, well, we've seen the product work. We've seen it do what it's doing. The third application there is now enforcement. Enforcement can mean any form, right? You can do you can do multi-factor authentication. You can block. You can use a network access control. You can challenge users. You can start with challenging only a group of privileged users. Then you start to get to your key executives. Then you get to your general population. You get to your contractors. So we think of that as a customer journey. It's also how we've architected the product so that you can start to get insights, you start to see the threats, and then you can start to do enforcement. It takes some customers, they start very quickly, but some customers, they have to go on the journey to get there.
Okay. Can you tell us more about your identity and access threat prevention model that your company has created?
Yeah, so this goes back to what I was saying before, right? Identity and access initially was considered to be a IT management, access management function, But we said you have to use it from a security standpoint because network architectures are changing. So you have to combine identity, behavior, and risk on the one side with the active prevention. And that led to this category that we're calling identity and access threat prevention. Think of it from a security standpoint, not from an access-only standpoint.
Okay, now which of these above-mentioned areas...
Which
areas seem to be getting most of your attention, or which ones gain the most traction with your clients?
That's an excellent question. And it depends on how you think about it. A lot of times, customers will say, wow, this is a modern approach to privilege access management. Because privilege access management solutions tend to be very hard to deploy, very hard to manage. You need jump servers. You think about password vaulting, all these things that you need to do. But with Preempt, not only do we help them identify them, but we also help them control it. So that's one place. If a company is saying, I don't know what my privileged users are doing, let me make sure I can control it, that's one. The second that we see quite often is enterprises face have to run through pen tests, penetration tests, to ensure that their network is secure. So often they fail. And they fail because somehow the penetration testers are able to get an account on Active Directory, are able to navigate the network, they're able to do the things they need to do to show compromise, simulated compromise. And when they fail that, it shows up as a problem for them because they have to report that to the board, they have to report that internally, auditors look at it. That drives a lot of interest. We see that all the time. So it's around the ability to look at privilege accounts. It's about the ability to make sure that nobody can compromise the network. So credential compromise falls under that category, making sure my Active Directory is secure. And it's interesting, we got a company that's an international bank that said to us, just this was in the last 2 weeks, said, we failed our penetration tests horribly. It was a disaster, and we just need something to help us get a control over our network. But then I dug deeper, and I said to them, so this is something that you care because people are coming from the outside? He says, no. You know, we've done so much to protect our perimeter and protect some of our assets. Now we're concerned about insiders that are misusing some of our privileges that they have. So the insider threats, the privilege access, the ability to identify when credentials have been compromised. Remember, credential compromise drives 4 out of 5 breaches. You need credentials before you can do something devastating. And so being able to identify those, being able to help enterprises know that they happened, that's the precursor to knowing that your next phase is you're going to lose data. So what if Preempt can help you prevent just a credential compromise? The data loss won't happen.
Right. Now, do you make any use of specialized algorithms for the credential compromise area? I mean, have you done any work like with AI or machine learning to kind of help with that?
Yeah, we do. We do. I try not to talk about it because every time I do that, a CISO rolls his eyes. A chief information security officer rolls his eyes. And he says, every one of you guys come in here and talk to us about it. So what we tell them is we do it too. It's not what drives our solution. I think the nuance to remember here is AI by itself doesn't do much for you. You know, there's a great debate going on whether algorithms are racist. I don't know if you've been following that on Twitter. But it's what you do and how you train these models. So what our team in Israel has done, successfully done, is these guys are not only data experts, they're also security experts. So we've got all the machine learning models, but the key was for us to make sure that we build in the security expertise that we have into those models. It does two things for you. One, it helps you identify the threats that you're trying to identify. But more than that, and this is very key, it helps reduce false positives. And that is something that is such a problem for enterprises. They are never going to find enough people that they need. And so for us, we give as much importance to knowing how to prevent you from having to add a person to deploy us, because you're not going to find that person, as much as finding value in the solution itself.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, talking about AI, just to kind of get off the subject here a little bit, I've been writing a lot of blogs on that. I think I've written 2 or 3. There's a flip side. Part of the cybersecurity world likes AI, and then the other side thinks it's going to be used more by the cyber attacker, I guess, and kind of using it for the reverse benefits. So there's a kind of like a flip side, I think, that's now there's going to be a huge debate here in 2019 here. So,
I know we got off topic here, but I was at a conference this morning, and this exactly came up. One of the panelists, the first thing he said was, why I worry about big data is not because we're not using it effectively, it's because the hackers have figured out how to deal with it more effectively than we have.
Right.
So that could be a challenge, you know, the machine fighting the machine. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, that could be a whole different podcast we could may host later on down the road just on AI. Now, how do you aid organizations in preventing privileged access compromise? Can you get into that in a little bit more detail?
Yeah. So think about how we've tried to do this traditionally. When you have the privileged accounts, right? And when you have those accounts, you're trying to control who accesses them, where they access it from, and the credentials that go with it itself, meaning, for example, the passwords. How long are those passwords valid? Then they checked out the password from a vault. Can they use it for 6 hours? Can they use it for 12? Can they use it for 24? You know, different companies have different policies. And what we said was all of that worked in a world where things are a little bit more static. But in this world where things are dynamic, where especially since multi-factor authentication has become so prevalent and most enterprises have it, what if you can make it all just in time? So, for example, we know you're a privileged user, but if you try to do something, then we, at that time, not when you logged in the morning, when you logged in and joined the network, when you try to use your privileged credentials at that time, what if we can verify your identity? That's more relevant than doing it, you know, once a day. Because sometimes when you draw out a password and you use the credentials, if a hacker is already on your network, they're just going to wait on a machine where they can harvest it using tools like Mimikatz, and then they can reuse it for as long as that password is valid. And this is not hypothetical. We were actually in a customer that had been compromised exactly this way. They had a privileged access management solution. One of the legitimate users withdrew a password from the vault, used it on a machine that was compromised by the hackers. The hackers were just sitting there, and all they had to do was to wait for the passwords to be renewed and reused, and they had access to it. But on the other hand, we said, if a user in an enterprise is using his privileged credentials, at that time, let's verify with multi-factor authentication on their phone. Let's send them a push notification to say, hey, are you trying to access this machine right now? That's so much more relevant, so much more real-time, so much more immediate. It's a lot more secure. And so that has become our way of helping enterprises get there. There is no doubt privileged access management solutions have a role around audits and around compliance, but if you don't have things like recording of sessions, or you know, you don't need a recording of a session for regulatory purposes, spare yourself the overhead and just use a solution like the one we are proposing. It's a lot easier, it's a lot less cumbersome, it's also a lot more secure. So we help people just verify identity in real time.
I'm just going to throw in an extra question there. My background has been biometrics, and I know that biometrics is starting to receive heavy attention with multi-factor authentication, especially with 2FA. Has Preempt done any work with like fingerprints or iris recognition, incorporating that into your products? Just out of sheer curiosity.
No, we have not. What I would suggest is there are companies that specialize in the biometric space. What we will do is we will integrate it via an API. So let's assume, for example, an enterprise decides to use biometrics for identity verification. We'll integrate into our product. So if someone's using their privileged credentials, we will leverage their biometrics to confirm that they are who they say they are. So we don't necessarily need to build that technology. We just need to leverage it if someone wants to use it.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, how do you protect the Active Directory infrastructure of a business? As we know, it's a central repository for a lot of, you know, PII, I think, private something. I can't remember the acronym, but it's for the confidential information. Can you go into that a little bit more detail, please?
Yeah, the acronym itself is Personally Identifiable Information, PII.
Yeah, that's
so. Right. So with Active Directory, it's where a lot of the credentials are stored. Let's, you know, we keep track of who's accessing what, who's authorized to access what. So it tends to be the keys to the kingdom. It's also why people don't want to put anything on that system, because if it crashes or it fails, like a security solution like Preempt, just in case, you know, it did something bad, well, nobody can do their jobs, and that could be very devastating. So because it's the keys, it's also where the hackers want to get to, because now let's assume I have credentials for a privileged user. Now I can go and create privileged users across the board. I can leverage them. I can do things that nobody can track. I can erase logs. I can do so many different things. So protecting AD is what we are helping them do. So for example, if a attacker gets on the network and tries to do a remote desktop into a domain controller, there's ways to stop it, but we can detect it. If they try to run Mimikatz, because there's an underlying authentication, not only can we detect it, we can block it. Or if someone's trying to use some credentials, compromised credentials, and try to do things on the domain controller, because there's an underlying authentication that happens before they can do it, for example, with what I call dual-use tools like PowerShell and PSXsec, we can not only verify who they are before they run that tool, because not always is it malicious. There may be a legitimate reason to run that tool. So we can verify the identity of the person who's trying to run that tool, and if they are who they say they are, they can do it. But if it's somebody malicious, they don't have the second factor, they won't be able to run it. So protecting Active Directory is a big deal, because it just essentially allows an attacker to go into, get credentials, go into different systems, you know, compromise your HR system, log into it, figure out what they want to do because they created the credentials. So protecting AD is super important, and it's also why attackers try to get there first, and that's also why we focus a lot on making sure you can't do much to compromise AD.
Now, can you describe in a little bit more detail the CARTA model and what the acronym actually stands for?
Yeah, so CARTA is a framework that Gartner came up with, and it's the acronym itself is Continuous Adaptive Risk and Trust Assessment. Quite simply, what they're saying is every digital transaction carries risk. What if you could minimize that risk with the transaction? So let's use an example. I am trying to log into this machine, and if the policy says every time I log into that machine, they just want to be sure it's me, it's Ajit who's trying to log into the machine, and they want me to do a multi-factor authentication. It's the simplest example of doing a CARTA, deploying the CARTA framework, where you are minimizing the risk because you verified my identity. And the problem with a lot of the authentication systems and the way we've done things in the past is, you know, we do it in the morning and then we don't challenge you. But with continuous adaptive risk, you know, you're trying to continuously figure out, okay, Ajit's score hasn't changed. He logged in the morning on this laptop, but now he's starting to show up on another laptop. We haven't seen him do that before. His risk profile changed. So you keep making these decisions around the changes in the risk profile and then decide how to respond, verify, and lower the ultimate risk. And that's why Gartner came up with this framework. It applies to a lot of different products. It applies to us. It applies to products like CASB's. It applies to endpoints. But the essential idea is that digital transactions carry risk. Try to reduce that risk by verifying in real time. Then you have a more secure network. The challenge for a lot of us is, how often do I want to bug you to verify what you're doing, right? If I keep asking you to verify and authenticate yourself 10 times a day, you're not going to be very productive. So we have to balance the idea behind verifying identity, the ideas behind ensuring that you are who you say you are, with the user experience, with productivity, and things like that. And that's it's a challenge. That's why you build in behavioral models, you build in deterministic models, you build in statistical models, you build in security knowledge. You can't just use one of them. You have to use them all to come up with something that really is effectively doing CARTA.
Gotcha. Sounds good. Now, how does a business or corporation implement a zero trust solution? I mean, is that kind of extreme when really nobody on the inside or outside can have any basic bare minimal amount of trust?
Yeah, It's like doing surgery on your network. When you're trying to do zero trust the way they say you should do zero trust in the pure sense of the phrase or the term, it's extremely difficult. And to your point, enterprises have to trust their employees, right? You hire them to do something, you have to trust them. The zero trust model, one of the best examples of it is the BeyondCorp solution that Google came up with. It's a great model. They've implemented it really well. Essentially, it's saying that rather than at a very simple level, right? Let's take a very simple example. I am working from home. I use the VPN. I'm logged in. Now I have access to my five or six internal servers, applications, maybe my desktop. In the zero trust model, that's not what you do. You hit a proxy. The proxy tells you you can go to this application, and this application will talk to you. You have nothing else. No trust. You're only going to the application. You don't have access to anything else. If you have another application you want to go to, you know, the proxy server will help you figure that out, and it'll connect to you so you don't connect to it. At a very simple level, that's how it works. So to do zero trust is great because now there's no lateral movement, there's no moving and navigating the network and things like that. You get to what you get to, and that's all you got. The problem with that is that enterprises have to go rework their entire infrastructure, and it's very difficult. So zero trust will take off. Our belief is that there's many different ways to do zero trust. Our approach is a little bit more incremental in that you write these policies using your existing infrastructure and challenge you to get there. But the pure zero trust model is extremely difficult. It's extremely it's change in user experience. What I tell people is the companies that have successfully done it, there's very few that are large scale that have done it. Google did, but it's a company with unlimited resources. You know, it's not easy for anybody else to do it. On the other hand, it is one of the most secure ways to do what you want to do, where you're verifying and tying people to specific access to specific activities, to specific servers. So while the model is great, we're all going to have to find a solution that is a little bit more incremental, meets our cost needs and our security needs, and that's what is happening. We offer one way. We won't go into too much detail here, but you're absolutely right. It is pretty extreme. Very difficult to do in a short period of time. It will happen over the coming years as new applications get rolled out. There will be more zero trust enabled than the legacy applications. And so enterprises will have a dual approach. They will continue to do what they're doing, but as they roll out new applications, they will probably tie them to a zero trust philosophy.
That sure sounds good. Now, do you provide any analytical tools or like any similar dashboards to let your customers see what is happening in terms of cyber threats and risks that are being detected and or mitigated?
Yeah, the central management that we offer does a lot of this. We provide a bunch of analytical tools. We also provide aggregated data that people can use. So, for example, not only do you want to know somebody's risk score, we provide a risk score on a very bounded basis. So 0 to 10. And the reason why we offer a risk score on a user is because then you can write rule policies for simple ones that you say, hey, your risk score is 8, which is pretty high risk, and you're coming from the VPN, and you're coming from a device that's not the company's device. We're going to have to block you from accessing this sensitive server. So there's that kind of analytics that we provide that on a dashboard. Or you may want to be a little bit more aggregated. You may say, we want to know if the finance department's score, what is the finance department's risk score as compared to that in those in marketing or in sales or in the executive team. So we provide all kinds of analytics that help you figure out the health of your organization, the health of your departments. You know, this information is great because now you can use it to figure out who needs more training, for example, or which teams are doing risky things, or which teams, you know, is your support team doing things they shouldn't be doing? Are your privileged users acting as security conscious as you want them to be? So the analytics we provide are tied to that. They're provided on the dashboard. At some point, we will want to share that with the users, but that's not today. We don't do that today, but at some point, there will be enterprises will very likely bring employees into the security fabric because they have to be warriors is just as much as the person in the security team to make an enterprise secure. And so we're going to have to share more with the employees to make them security savvy, and that'll happen too. The analytics will work both ways.
Now, do you have any customer success stories or any case studies that you can share with us, or any like highlights of some successful implementations that you'd like to have our audience know about?
Yeah, in security, one of the biggest challenges is always trying to get someone to speak publicly about a solution because they don't want to tip their hand on the solutions they have. Though we've been somewhat fortunate, we have a few customers on our website that have been willing to publicly talk about it. There's Cox Miracle-Gro on the one side. There's Charlotte Russe, the retailer for teenagers. There's, I'm trying to think, there's Moravian College, which is a educational institution. There's a couple of financial institutions that are coming up here in the next few weeks. But in most cases, it's amazing what we hear. One of the things that we heard from one customer was, if I ever have an incident, yours is the first dashboard I go to. I just want to know what is going on. Then, as I mentioned, when the company had, someone had compromised the network and had persistence on their network, they were just waiting for passwords to be withdrawn for a privileged account from a vault. And they were navigating that for a long time. We had one where somebody had joined the marketing organization but kept trying to log into the CEO's machine. And not once, but twice. Hmm. And that was a contract. It was crazy. It's still hard for me to believe that that's true, but they did have to take action on that. So we see a lot of those. The thing to remember, though, with security solutions is, what is the value you're providing on a daily basis? Yeah, there's a lot of value you can provide when I'm being breached. A lot of value you can provide when you deploy us for the first time. But can you provide me continuous value? And that's where a solution like ours shines, because you did something unusual. Well, we challenged you. You verified your identity. We let you do what you have to do. No analyst had to run down and ask you whether it was the right thing for you to do or not. So providing continuous value is a big challenge for many security solutions, and we've strived to do that. So that's one. Second thing is, and I pride myself on this, and for most organizations, almost all of them, they've deployed us. They haven't had to hire somebody. Because every time you bring in a security solution, you have to find more people to manage it. And we've tried very hard to make the deployment super easy, the ongoing management super easy. You know, you should have no more than one or two incidents a week per 1,000 to 1,500 users. That's what we strive for. Everything else should get auto-resolved or should be something that you don't have to deal with unless you really have a porous network. So we've tried to do more and more of those, and auto-remediation is one big part of it. And that's really what I think is the future of security, is where you can respond automatically or in an automated fashion, resolve incidents, not have somebody chase things down, because there's just not enough people.
Sure. Now, obviously, there's a plethora of cybersecurity vendors. They're more growing day by day. What makes you different from anybody else? Why should customers say, hey, I want to come to you first before I go to, you know, cybersecurity company XYZ? Why should they come to you first?
Yeah, no. It's probably one of our biggest challenges is getting the word out on who we are. More and more, vendor marketing is getting drowned out because everybody, I think the number is about 3,000 security startups. It's crazy.
Oh, wow.
Think about the security officers and the security executives in enterprises. They just don't have the time. Everybody's message sounds the same. Everybody's value proposition sounds the same. You know, how do you parse through it? And I completely empathize with that. I think that the best way that we can get our message out is to have our customers speak about us. And more we get leads from somebody who says, hey, I was talking to my peer at this other enterprise, and they told us to talk to you. We're seeing a lot of that. But that's not sufficient, right? We still need to get the word out. And what we're starting to see is when we go out and tell enterprises, here's how to think about the problem. This is not detection. It's not a detection-only solution. It's not a response-only solution. Here's how you integrate it together. Here's how you go on a journey where you can start to see value and add more value over time. It's starting to really resonate. We're now starting to see companies that talk about the message, the product, the way we do, where they're talking about detection and response and things like that. They're a little bit earlier than we are, but it's great validation that we probably are onto something. There's probably a market where identity and access threat prevention becomes what enterprises want to do, becomes best practice. Once it becomes best practice, there'll be budgets. It'll be a little bit more easier to get customers to look at us. At this point, a lot of it is just hard work. Our contacts, our customers referring us, the sales team's capabilities, the marketing that we do, a lot of inbound leads, digital marketing, you know, all the regular stuff that everybody does. We just try hard to be effective at what we do.
Well, obviously, you must be getting your word out. I mean, you have a stunning growth rate of 300%, you know, last fiscal year. How did you, I mean, can you tell us about that?
I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that, you know, we initially when we started out, we had some really customers who were really willing to speak to us, not publicly, but privately to other people that they knew in the other information security officers, chief information security officers, and we were very fortunate to get that initial lift, and that's really what helped us. That growth, you know, now the bigger numbers and things, you know, the challenges go up, but it's been pretty good to see that. What it also meant was we were starting to work with larger and larger companies, and the deal sizes got bigger, so that's been an interesting trajectory over the last couple of years.
Awesome. Now, I mean, we know that, you know, there's talk of recession in 2020, and we know that the financial markets have been gyrating back and forth wildly, you know, since October. But the cybersecurity industry seems to be obviously doing quite well in getting VC money. Can you tell us more about the $17.5 million in Series B funding that you've just received, and how do you plan to use the money in general? I know you probably can't get into all the details of that, but just in general terms, how do you plan to use that money?
So I would say it's pretty much across the board. We have increased the size of our sales team. We've started to invest more in engineering because innovation is going to be key for us to grow. And we're doing a lot more marketing than we did before. So we've started to invest it. We are, and as I tell the team, we are frugal. We're not cheap. So we want to make sure that we don't we continue to hit the milestones that we need to hit so that the company can grow. And that's going to be key because it's very easy to lose control and discipline around that, and we're trying very hard to keep that discipline so that we're around.
Now, what are your general plans for expansion for Preempt? Are you going to offer new products, new services, trade new customers, go to new markets, or a mishmash of kind of all three of these things?
I don't believe that we're adding new products. We're definitely expanding the current product line, addressing more use cases on the current platform itself. People are, you know, enterprises are having a hard time buying a point product, so we want to make sure that we can address a lot of challenges for them. So on that front, it will be more of a build-out of the current platform. When it comes to the growth, we will continue to be focused on North America and Western Europe. I think that for the midterm, that's the right thing to do. It's just simple, right? Because the more customers we have in a region, the more we get word of mouth, the more we get momentum. Rather than having one customer in every country, it's so much better to have just a few customers but located next to each other, and it builds more momentum. So we will continue to focus. And I think that the focus is going to help us be more successful in the long run.
Sure. Now, finally, as we wrap up our show, one question that commonly gets asked to me and as well as my other podcast guests is, how do you foresee the cyber threat landscape changing, and how do you see evolving in the coming years, and or what do you think the biggest threat will be coming here in 2019? I mean, we keep hearing about ransomware, cryptojacking, you know, all forms of the different variants of phishing attacks. What are your thoughts on all that?
I think that there's many different kinds of threats. It's just like I tell people, you don't go into a battle with only battle tanks, right? You go into a battle with different kinds of tools. An army is not made of just soldiers or the Air Force. Just like that, the tools that we have are going to keep evolving because the threats are going to change. Now, most of the threats we've seen until now have had to do with using individuals as a vector into the enterprise. But it's not inconceivable to say, well, the next set of attacks is going to be against the infrastructure. And when I mean infrastructure, I don't mean the critical infrastructure. That's already an issue. That's going to remain an issue for a long time. But also the infrastructure for enterprises like the public cloud, like the private cloud. So I think that there will be some pretty big challenges for us to deal with when it comes to the infrastructure that the enterprise is now depending on. In addition to the critical infrastructure that we all depend on for our daily, you know, for our water and for everything else. So the challenges are going to become a little bit more macro, impact a lot more people at one time. You know, it's no longer like my business got compromised. It's more like, hey, we're all using this public cloud, and so we all got compromised, or we all are going to lose some connectivity. So I think the threats are going to become a little bit more broad, and the impact is going to be broader than in the past. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Sure. Well, Ajith, thank you very much for your time this evening. We appreciate it, and we hope to have you again here in the near future on another podcast.
I thank you very much. You know, these are great questions. It made me think, so I appreciate it.
Maybe we could hold another podcast just on AI and machine learning. What do you think about that?
It is. Absolutely.
All right. We'll talk to you soon then. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.